This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tonight, John Kerry presents himself to the country at the Democratic Convention, where he's expected to echo many of the themes we've heard over the past few days in Boston and reach out to moderates and undecided voters whose support he will need come November. But to win, Kerry will also need to appeal to the activist elements of his party, the anti-war campaigners, environmentalists, civil rights, and gay rights advocates. In hopes of attracting the former group, swing voters, relatively little has been heard this week from the latter, the activists. Polls show that most of the delegates at the Fleet Center disagree with their presidential nominee on Iraq and gay rights, gay marriage, for example, but they fear that exposing those differences might alienate moderates. This hour, we'll talk with Tom Vilsack, governor of the swing state of Iowa, with former presidential candidate Carol Moseley Braun, and with two dissident delegates at the convention. Later in the program, a review of the week in Boston, inside and outside the hall. But first, will Democratic activists continue to take one for the team and follow their candidate despite his move toward the center? What constituency do you identify with? Have you heard your issues being addressed? And what do the Democrats need more, swing voters or an energized base? Does winning trump any issue? Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We'll get to those issues in just a couple of minutes, but first, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us from Boston. Ken, always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Let's start with John Edwards' speech last night as he became the vice presidential nominee. All week we've been hearing about Edwards' charisma, his ability to capture an audience. How did he do?
Well, I think if you have never heard John Edwards before, then you'd be very impressed. He has a great, I mean, we've said this over and over again, but he has he's a great family, a great speaking style. Having argued before juries all his life, he argued before a much larger jury yesterday and did very, very well. He has this sense of optimism. He brings this optimism, especially in a convention when so many people in the room, in the Fleet Center, are so pessimistic. So again, if you haven't heard him before, if last night was your first witness of John Edwards, you should be very, very impressed. Many people I've spoken to who have heard him before, however, have said that they really heard nothing new. Now, maybe it's jaded journalists or people who've been around the campaign a long time. But again, there were a lot of catchphrases that we've seen over and over in Iowa and New Hampshire. He says it very, very well, but it seemed for somebody as bright and new star-ish as he is, some of it did seem choreographed.
Tonight, John Kerry's turn, of course. Any leaks on what we could expect to hear him say tonight?
Well, I think, once again, you know, everybody says that he has to give the greatest speech of his life. I mean, we hear that over and over and over again. We hear that at every convention. Basically, he just has to sell himself as somebody who can do a better job than George W. Bush on issues of national security and economic vitality. And I think a lot of tonight, starting with not starting, but including the introduction by Max Cleland, you will have the biography of John Kerry from being born in Colorado. He points that out, not Massachusetts, not liberal Massachusetts. He was born in Colorado, through Vietnam and through his 20-plus years in the Senate.
There will also be one of those modern addenda to all of these conventions, the biographical film, 9.5 minutes.
Well, you know what, he has a great biography. He has a great story to tell. A lot of people still don't know who John Kerry is. Of course, if you listen to Republican commercials, he's a liberal flip-flopper from Massachusetts. If you watch the Kerry video tonight, and I hope you'll all be watching it on NPR, you'll be seeing basically somebody who has served his country well, commendations for valor and bravery, and the tributes that he's had from his military buddies continue to this day.
Many of these speeches, the ones in prime time at least, have been notable to some Democrats in what they've not said as much as what they have said. Is there any concern that this might marginalize the Democratic base or at least make them feel marginalized?
No, because for all the people who stayed on script, for the Al Gores, the Bill Clintons, the Hillary Clintons, everybody else who stayed on script, there were fiery rhetoric coming from people like Al Sharpton, gave an amazing speech last night. Did he violate the rules? Perhaps. He was only scheduled to talk for 6 minutes. He spoke for 23 minutes. Was he following the teleprompter? No, because much of what he said last night was not even appearing on the teleprompter. It was a lot of the stuff that Sharpton does the best, but But again, if Al Gore was afraid to really talk about Florida, and Florida remains a sore point with so many people here, Al Sharpton had no reticence.
Ken Rudin, have a good time tonight. We expect to listen to your play-by-play of that film.
Make sure to watch it on NPR.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He's joined us all this week from NPR's convention center headquarters up there in Boston. The marginalization issue did come up last night in the speech by former presidential candidate Al Sharpton. He responded to last week's implication from President Bush in his speech to the Urban League in Detroit that African Americans might indeed feel taken for granted by Democrats and should therefore return to the party of Lincoln.
It is true that Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, after which there was a commitment to give 40 acres and a mule. That's where the argument to this day of reparations starts. We never got the 40 acres. We went all the way to Herbert Hoover, and we never got the 40 acres. We didn't get the mule. So we decided we'd ride this donkey as far as it would take us.
The Reverend Al Sharpton speaking to the Democratic convention last night. Joining us now from Boston is his former U.S. Senator and, along with Al Sharpton, a former rival of John Kerry's for the Democratic nomination, Carol Mosley Braun. Good to speak with you again.
I'm delighted to be with you also.
Did you think that Al Sharpton hit the nail on the head last night, or is there something to President Bush's appeal to African Americans to consider the Republicans?
Well, you know, the Republicans specialize in divide, conquer, and play on fears and insecurity. And that's all they're doing with this appeal to African-American voters to appeal to their disenchantment or potential disenchantment with the delivery of the Democratic Party. I've been in government for a while. I had to sue my own party back in the 1980s on reapportionment, and I won and created new seats for black and Hispanic voters. So I'm not shy about talking about issues of who's on your side. But at the same time, there is just no question that the record of the Democratic Party and the record of the Republican Party, they're not even in the same constellation when it comes to addressing issues important to the African-American community. Whether that is health care or educational opportunity or an opportunity to have a good job, an opportunity to get ahead and be included in this society, the Democratic Party really has been an advocate for black voters, and black voters have rewarded it with their votes. Now, the Republicans are now going to play on fears again and say, well, but have you gotten as much as you asked for? And my response to that is, you know, let's talk about what we want to ask for, and then let's see where the parties line up in terms of what they're prepared to deliver.
If you'd like to join our conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address TOTN@NPR.org. Are Democrats taking their core constituent groups for granted? Let's take a call from Melanie, who joins us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I definitely agree with Carol Mosley Braun. I am originally from Chicago, and I just attended the National Urban League conference where President Bush did speak, and he brought up many of those same points, and that is pretty much asking the African Americans or suggesting that they are being taken for granted, and it's, in some respect that is true. But my question is, from what I need to hear from the Kerry campaign is, what does he really intend to do from an economic standpoint? And that message has not resonated with me or with my colleagues. And what is happening is, I think our economic policies have become more conservative. However, from a social perspective, I'm very much a liberal. And I am a Democrat, and I will vote Democrat, although my economic policies are very conservative. But I can't vote Republican because, you know, they don't look at the health care and the social programs in the same way that I do as an African American.
Let's get a response from Ambassador Mosley Braun.
Well, remember the Democrats, you know, it's funny because I've had to walk that line of being an unabashed social liberal, but more conservative, to use the term, on on economic policy. And it's a difficult thing to describe because, quite frankly, what used to be conservative isn't anymore. The fact of the matter is it's Democrats who balanced the budget. It's Democrats who didn't, who saved the party from budget deficits. It's Democrats who put money back into the Treasury, protected the Social Security Trust Fund, created jobs here at home, helped to improve the quality and standard of life, and open up economic opportunity for Americans, not the Republicans. And so they just grab the label, but there's no there there. They have given this country the biggest budget deficits. Our current account deficit, of course, which includes trade, is just out of sight. And the fact is that, you know, we are right now on not only living on borrowed money, but frankly skating on very thin ice that our foreign friends will decide to pull the plug on our economy. I mean, we are in really, really tough shape. And quite frankly, if these people who are, if the policymakers, the Bush crowd, are continue to call that conservative, then we're just going to have to come up with another name of what that kind of economics is, because it doesn't comport with any conservative economic philosophy that I've ever seen. Would you not agree with that?
Oh, I definitely agree with you. I mean, if the rhetoric was in line with what he does or what the Republican Party actually does, you know, I think, quite frankly, during the National Convention, President Bush did make some very valid points. But his policies are not in line with what he says.
With what he's talking about. Now, let me take a moment, if I can, because I know it's precious radio time, but to tell you a little bit about the John Kerry I know. I worked with this man for 6 years. And you know, when you go to work with somebody every day for 6 years, you kind of get a sense of where they're coming from, particularly in a legislative body. And I can tell you that he was on the right side of all the issues, from balanced budget constitutional amendment on to creating jobs. He's particularly interested in investment in high-tech industries, and I'm convinced myself that the high-tech industries, and particularly in regards to energy, really will not only create great jobs that we can grow here at home, but will help relieve our dependence on foreign oil and help us begin to address some of the long-term issues we face in everything from education to health care. So John Kerry is really ahead of the curve on all of these economic issues, on job creation issues, and I believe that under his direction and his leadership, we will see a resurgence, a renaissance, if you will, of the ability to build good jobs here at home in the United States and create opportunity for people who are prepared to take advantage of it.
Melanie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for your time.
And let's go now to John. John's with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I just got to say that I tend to be a Green Party voter locally, and I've always been a Democratic voter nationally. And I definitely was rooting for Kucinich in the early stages of this campaign. But I have to say I have quite a bit of respect for John Kerry just in terms of where he's coming from, his experience, and, of course, his place as a veteran. But I am hoping, and I'm kind of worried that, you know, if Democrats and people who call themselves progressives or liberals, if they do not stay on top of the president and the Congress, whether it be a Republican president or a Democratic president, that the issues that African Americans, that gays, that everybody who feels slighted by the Republicans, if people don't stay on top of those issues with the current administration, with the next administration, which I really hope comes to be, then it doesn't matter who you're voting for. People really have to just stay involved.
There's no question.
And 30 seconds, Ambassador Mosley Braun, would you be one of those people who would be holding the new administration's, should there be one, feet to the fire on those issues and Iraq?
Well, I've always been one to speak truth to power. I mean, you know my record at all. I tell it like I see it. And again, I can tell this caller and anybody else, I feel very comfortable with John Kerry, having worked with him for 6 years and knowing that on the environment, on issues of creation of jobs, on issues of opportunity and inclusion, we have no better person, leader in the United States.
Former Senator Carol Mosley Braun and former Ambassador Mosley Braun, we thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Ambassador Mosley Braun was also formerly a Democratic candidate for President of the United States. We're talking about the concerns of core constituents at this week's Democratic convention. Are they being taken for granted? After the break, Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack and delegates from the floor, and more of your calls. 800-989-8255, TOTN at npr.org. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Monday on Talk of the Nation, we'll be joined by two members of the 9/11 Commission. If you've had the time to read and digest the 9/11 Commission report, send us an email with your questions to the commissioners about what's there, what's not, what's next. Our email address, as always, is totn@npr.org. Put 9/11 Commission in the subject line, if you would. Again, the address is totn@npr.org. The 9/11 commissioners will join us on Monday. Today, as the Kerry campaign builds on its big tent politics designed to win over swing voters, we're talking about how to hold on to the base in the Democratic Party, or whether that base is in any way at risk. You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from the Fleet Center in Boston is Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack. And good to have you on Talk of the Nation, sir.
It's great to be here, Neil. Thank you.
Democratic Party, by many accounts, is more unified this year than it has been in many elections in the past. How do you preserve that unity through November while reaching out to the center, to the swing voters?
Well, I think by focusing on the fact that this is the most important election Americans have faced for several generations, there are so many challenges both here and abroad. Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards have called for a stronger America here. I think that there are a lot of Americans that feel anxious about the economy, who feel anxious about the cost of health care and energy. And there are many, many Americans who are very concerned about our standing in the world. They want an America that inspires and leads, not one that dictates. And I think all of those concerns will continue to energize our base as we begin to talk about specific programs that will make people's lives better. Particularly working families and middle-class families. The focus will be on saying to them, we hear your anxieties, we know your concerns, and we want to address them, and we have some very specific ideas that are good ideas that we want to share with you during this campaign.
Here's an email we've gotten from Nancy Bowen in Richmond, Indiana. I'm 48 years old. This is the first Democratic convention in my memory where there's been no mention of a woman's right to choose or indeed any women's issues. Also, there's been no mention of environmental issues. And if Kerry and Edwards are so interested in reaching out to other nations, then why has no one mentioned the U.S. returning to the Kyoto Protocol and other treaties that the current administration has withdrawn from?
Actually, I think several of those items have been mentioned during the course of speeches during the convention, and I will tell you that the concept of renewable energy and fuel that Senator Kerry speaks of is not only an economic issue, but it's clearly an environmental issue. There's no question that renewable fuels are cleaner burning and better for the environment. There's also no question that it will allow us to sever our dependence on foreign oil, which will put us in a much better position to negotiate a lasting peace in the Middle East, and will also create better-paying, high-tech jobs in this country. And I think you're going to continue to hear Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards, particularly in the heartland where I'm from, talk about renewable energy. And there's also been a discussion about the fact that the United States has adopted under the Bush administration a go-it-alone policy, our way or the highway. And I think many, many Americans are troubled by a number of international treaties that the United States has walked away from. And they've become very concerned about this approach. This is not the America that inspires. It's not the America that leads. And I think Americans are concerned about that.
Let's get a caller on the line. Joyce is with us from Warren, Rhode Island.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
Great conversation on the air.
Thank you.
Very needed one, too.
Go ahead with your question, and we have Governor Vilsack with us.
Well, hello, Governor. My question or comment are directed at you specifically, but thank you for being there. I know it's a great ordeal to travel and to be among all of the hubbub there in the center of Boston. I was there the other day standing outside of the so-called free speech zone for a while and managed to walk around the city and caught quite a lot of the different voices and messages that were being brought there from many parts of the circle of opinion. But a little while ago you asked the question of who I felt most represented by so far at the convention, and I would have to say that person would be Medea Benjamin, who was a woman who had managed to get into the floor, I believe the day before yesterday, carrying a banner that said, end the occupation in Iraq. And I would say she represents me. She represents an awful lot of people who are grieving around the world and who think that we really need to listen, to engage in radical listening and courageous activity. She has gone herself disarmed as a disarmed person into high security zones under great risk to herself, exhibiting tremendous courage in the front lines of many, many places around the world. where there is a lot of murder going on and war and craziness, and she brings a consistent message of breaking the cycle of violence. Medea Benjamin represents me, and I can say with great confidence, having stood out on the street of Warren, Rhode Island, which is the smallest town in the smallest county in the smallest state of these so-called United States, with the sign often I stand out there with a sign saying the war on terror is a lie. And I get a great deal of support from Main Street USA.
Joyce,
so I say Medea represents us all, Neil, and thank you so much for having the conversation.
Okay, Joyce, thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
We appreciate it. Joining us now on the phone from Boston is Amy Schmidt. She's a delegate from Cary, North Carolina. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you.
You came to Boston as a delegate for Dennis Kucinich, perhaps the most anti-war of the Democratic candidates. Much has been made this week of candidate John Kerry's war record. Does that make it harder for you to sell John Kerry to your friends back at home when you campaigned against the war and John Kerry, he voted for it?
Yes, it does. I plan to, when I get back to North Carolina, the discussion that I plan to have is that people should still remember that John Kerry, when he came back from Vietnam, protested vehemently, and I believe that it is not John Kerry who is underplaying that. I believe that the DNC has a strategy to cater to the to middle America, and they believe that what the RNC is doing to talk about the need for heightened security and continue this fear message that they're delivering, that unfortunately he has to play into that and not talk about what he may have done in his protest days regarding the Vietnam War.
But now at this point, are you for John Kerry, or is John Kerry the lesser of two evils as far as you're concerned?
Oh, I will support John Kerry and John Edwards 100%. But with my vote on the floor last night, I had to vote the way that my constituency wanted me to vote, and also the way that I believe I'm going to be able to get the vote out for John Kerry and John Edwards in November. I cast my vote for Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you very much.
Neil,
thank
if I
you.
Can...
go ahead, Governor Vilsack.
Comment on both of those calls. I think you can capsulize this election as a choice between fear and hope. I think the caller was correct when she suggested that the RNC and the Bush administration are trying to create an atmosphere of fear, so that we focus on maintaining stability and continuing with the team that we have. I think there is a better way and a better day, and I think John Edwards began to talk about it last night with his focus on hope, and I suspect that John Kerry will talk about it tonight as well. We must have a more hopeful nation, a more hopeful nation that extends better-paying jobs for families, extends health care coverage for all, that protects the environment, and that actually reconnects the United States of America to the world community. One of the reasons why Senator Kerry's war experience is being touted is to show the character and the mettle of the man. If you think about it, John Kerry was faced with a choice on several occasions in Vietnam, a life or death choice. And he chose with great character and great courage to make the right choice. And isn't that the kind of person we want in the White House? Someone who has experienced under fire life and death decisions and who has always made the right decision, the morally right decision, the decision that was consistent with the values that we hold and cherish in this country. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's been an emphasis on that.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Devin, who joins us from Salt Lake City. My screen says Nevada. I suspect it's Utah.
Yes, it is Utah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just calling, wanted to get a comment. You know, the Clinton I could support. He seemed more neutral on more social conservative issues like gun control. And although he had a position, you know, he seemed more like he was willing to talk and communicate with the, the other side of the aisle. And I don't know, Kerry just seems much more, hyper-liberal in Massachusetts Democrat, that, you know, he's firm in his position as far as, like, social conservative issues, and I'm just concerned if he were to, be elected, that he's not going to negotiate or, work with the other side, as far as Clinton was willing to at least start a communication and at least hear the concerns of, things like gun control or father's rights and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Governor Vilsack?
Yeah, let me respond to that. First of all, Senator Kerry and Senator McCain worked together in a bipartisan fashion to open up trade opportunities and open up dialogue with Vietnam. That was a bipartisan effort. I can also tell you that the senator is a gun owner, is a hunter, understands and appreciates the necessity of protecting the Second Amendment right, and has repeatedly said that. And I will tell you, as far as coming from the state of Massachusetts, Senator Kerry understands the necessity of balancing the budget. He understands the necessity of being fiscally responsible. We have had one of the most fiscally irresponsible administrations in the history of our country. We have a $500 billion annual deficit. We've gone from a $5 trillion expected surplus over the next decade to a $5 trillion expected deficit. Our children and grandchildren will pay for that in poorer schools, less health care, less environmental protection, less opportunity. Foreign investors in this country will become squeamish as interest rates go up and as the debt load continues. John Kerry believes in a fiscally responsible America, and he has a plan to begin the reduction of that deficit and ultimately elimination. And I would point out that it was a Democratic president with only Democratic votes, including John Kerry's vote. There wasn't a single Republican vote for the balanced budget law of 1993, which gave us the surplus that we enjoyed, the 22 million jobs that we enjoyed under the Clinton administration. So it's Democrats who understand the value of fiscal responsibility, and that should not be forgotten.
Devin?
Well, I can accept that. I just, as far as, contrasting between himself and Clinton, do you think that's going to come out in the convention this night? Because it seems more like he's much more left-leaning than, Clinton ever appeared to be or may have been. So I'll take off the air.
Thanks, Devin. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Senator Kerry's got to continue to do the job of introducing himself. He's not obviously had 4 years and a president, a father who was a president President Bush, the current President Bush, had, so that people got a sense of who George Bush was. John Kerry has to use the next 100 days to make sure people understand the direction he wants to take this country and that he's got the character and the values and the courage to take us there.
Our guest is the governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack. He's joining us from the Democratic National Convention at the Fleet Center in Boston, Massachusetts. We're talking about whether the core constituents of the Democrats, whether they're being taken for granted, whether their activism is going to be necessary come November, and whether the party can keep them while it moves to the center. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Gloria Ann Leck, a delegate for John Kerry from Youngstown, Ohio. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's very late here.
It gets late early as the week goes
right.
on, to paraphrase Yogi Berra. I know gay rights are an important issue for you. John Kerry says he would not support a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, but he is not in favor of gay marriage either. Is his position strong enough to get support from the gay and lesbian voters at the polls come November?
Well, I certainly can't speak for all gay and lesbian voters, but the constituency that elected me as a delegate to come to this convention, I think, will be very, very happy to see the actual wording of the amendment, which I can read it quickly for you.
Mm-hmm.
In the platform, it says, "We support full inclusion of gay and lesbian families in the life of our nation and seek equal responsibilities, benefits, and protections for these families. In our country, marriage has been defined as the state level for 200 years, and we believe it should continue to be defined there." I think that's the strongest statement we've ever seen. And in this country, which I think the theme I'm hearing here at the convention makes me so comfortable at this point, is that the Democratic Party has unified itself and we're clearly aware of the danger of the extremism of the current administration. And this kind of message of we're going to go back to understanding we're all in this together and accepting each other and the diversity makes me believe we are on a path to the acceptance that we're seeking. And I think the issue of gay marriage is a wedge issue the way it's been arranged. I think as that gets defined, what we mean by two people being committed to each other And when we guarantee the protections of contract law that allows people to make those partnership arrangements, I think that's going to move us into the position that we need to be to feel we're fully accepted and that our strengths are part of the American dream.
Yet we've heard just a few mention of gay rights issues thus far.
Yeah, I'm sitting there and counting who includes us as they even talk about the things they're bringing together. And about half of the speakers are, in fact, daring to say something about gay and lesbian families and such. And I think that's a tremendous improvement in terms of the Democratic Party, and it is an incredible contrast to what's going on in the Republican Party.
Well, let me ask Governor Vilsack, is gay rights a wedge issue in Iowa?
Well, there's no question that Republicans want to use this issue as a wedge issue. This is another one of those fear issues. And I will tell you that John Kerry is probably at his most eloquent when he talks about the necessity of an America that is free and fair to all, an America that guarantees rights and opportunities and protections for all. I mean, if you consider the fact that there are committed gay couples all across this great land who love each other very deeply, but yet do not have the same right of inheritance, do not have the same right to visit in the hospital, all of the rights that other couples take for granted. In an America that is free and fair, it only makes sense that we recognize those relationships and provide the protections and the obligations and the opportunities that those committed relationships deserve. And John Kerry speaks to that. The platform also speaks to it as well.
Here's an email from Donald. I am a gay man and extremely unhappy with the Kerry Edwards position that anti-gay bigotry is the purview of the states and their constitutions. No matter how you slice it, he writes, it's anti-gay bigotry. John Kerry has actually supported codifying second-class status for lesbians and gays in the Massachusetts Constitution. Gloriann Leca, we just have a few seconds left, but I wondered if you wanted to respond.
Well, as I said, I think we're going to work this out. I think right now we have some linguistic and some legal problems about who sanctions marriage. And I want to be part of that dialogue, and I think for most of us that's going to be a breakthrough. And I'm encouraged. I think this is further than we thought we would get in the platform initially. And I think it's being done under the civil rights category, which is where it should be, rather than being seen as a separate issue. As Governor Vilsack has said, I think this is a matter of providing dignity so that we can use the strengths of all the people in this country rather than dividing us from one another. We need to bring this country back. We've had a very, very bad 4 years.
Gloriann Leck, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Gloriann Leck, a Democratic delegate from Youngstown, Ohio, joined us on the phone from Boston. And Governor Vilsack is going to stay with us for a couple of minutes more after the break to continue this conversation, more of your calls and emails as well. And we're going to go behind the scenes to find out about the buzz around the edges of this convention. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about energizing activists and appealing to the core constituents in the Democratic Party. Our guest is Governor Tom Vilsack of Iowa. He's joining us from the Democratic National Convention in Boston. And let's get another caller on the air. Thomas is with us from Ann Arbor.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'm calling to urge that Senator Kerry and the Democratic Party this year take more notice of Democratic progressives and people that voted in the 2000 year election for Ralph Nader or simply set out the election. I believe that Senator Gore, former Senator and Vice President Gore, would have been president today had not progressives voted for Ralph Nader or set out the election. And I'm also calling on Senator Kerry and the Democratic Party to give more attention to seniors. Seniors are most likely voters, and I'm not hearing enough in the Democratic Party platform about seniors.
Governor Vilsack, I wanted to get your response to Thomas's first answer. Clearly, if activists feel their issues are not being addressed, you do risk them either sitting it out, as Thomas says, or defecting to Ralph Nader.
Well, I'll tell you, Neil, I think it's up to the party and to people like myself to amplify Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards on a number of issues. I will tell you that the idea of getting our fiscal house in order is all about senior citizens, if we think we're going to have a solvent Social Security system and Medicare system while continuing to rob the Social Security system and having huge budget deficits, we're kidding ourselves. We have a train wreck coming down the tracks, and we have got to address this, and Senator Kerry understands that. There's also, I think, a clear understanding that we cannot live with the prescription drug bill that Congress has passed that prohibits the federal government from negotiating for lower prices for seniors, that eliminates the opportunity to provide lower-cost prescription drugs by importing them from Canada. It's something that can't be repaired. It has to be replaced. There are a number of other senior issues involving jobs that will help support seniors, employment opportunities, because there are a lot of active seniors that are interested in continuing to contribute. There are service programs. There are a variety of programs that the senator has proposed. And plus, the idea of continuing to provide tax relief for middle-income Americans, many of whom are seniors, so that those fixed incomes can be stretched just a little bit more. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of things that all of the party officials need to amplify, because Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards can only talk, obviously, about a few subjects at a time in order to get through to the American public.
Thomas, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's get one more call for Governor Vilsack. Jerry from Burlington, Vermont.
Yes. I wanted to comment on something that was said earlier about the Democrats for a long while really ignoring the issue, say, of gay rights or gay marriage and the protests on the war. I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican, but I really trace largely the indifference, if not hostility, among voters to Democrats and the change, radical change over a long period of time, to the fact that the Democrats are making themselves indistinguishable from the Republicans as they can and adopting their platforms, adopting their points of view. And I don't think that that's – I think if, for example, if instead of saying we're going to cut your taxes or we're not going to – something along those lines, if somebody would say, well, we won't cut your taxes, but we'll be giving you more services, not more war, but more services. We're going to give you better retirement. We're going to give you Medicaid and so on, just paving the roads, you know. If we're put that way, people see that their taxes go to garbage. I mean, I don't mean collecting garbage. It's too bad it doesn't. And that's why people get turned off.
Governor Vilsack?
Well, let me respond to that. I think Senator Kerry has said that to the extent that we're providing tax relief to the wealthiest Americans, that is tax relief that is unnecessary and makes it difficult for us not only to be fiscally responsible, but socially responsible. If we're going to provide for better schools, if we're going to provide health care for all, it will take a commitment from our government. And one of the ways to finance that commitment is by rolling back those portions of the Bush tax cuts that are designed to help those who are making $200,000 or more, people who clearly don't need the tax relief, and people who have already received substantial benefits under previous tax cuts. So I think Democrats are saying that, and I will say that there's a great distinction between Republicans and Democrats on many issues, but there's probably no clearer distinction than on the issue of health care. The Democratic platform clearly points out that health care in this country is a right that should be affordable and accessible to all Americans. Republican platforms basically suggest that health care is a privilege and not a right. That is a very clear fundamental difference between the parties that affects every single American.
Jerry, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And Governor Vilsack, we know it's been a long week. We appreciate you taking so much time to speak with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Tom Vilsack is governor of Iowa, and he joined us from the Fleet Center in Boston.